Joe, how's your left knee feeling?
Feels good. Obviously, it's not 100% or even close, but for where I'm at, it feels pretty good.
Describe what the rehab process has been like for you thus far.
Well, you know, the first 2 weeks was pretty miserable. Couldn't really get out of bed on my own or do anything on my own. But around week three or four, I was able to start walking on my own a little bit. And it's starting to feel pretty normal when I'm walking around and doing some bodyweight squats and stuff like that. So it's moving along.
You said it's not 100%. What percentage would you give your knee right now?
Probably 15. I haven't started running or doing anything like that. I just started bodyweight squats. So we got a long ways to go.
Joe, Bengals' new offensive line coach, Frank Pollock, has a term, master the mundane. That's what he says a good offensive lineman has to do, is master the mundane. As you're starting the early process of rehab, does that apply to you? You got to master the mundane?
Yeah, I would say that applies to me. Rehab is a long, mundane process. And you got to find ways to spice it up a little bit. But, you know, we're attacking it like I do always. And I think it's going well.
How much pain at this stage? How much pain are you experiencing, if any?
There's still some. If I sit down too long, the knee will start to hurt and it'll start to stiffen up a little bit. But, you know, when I'm doing the rehab, there's not much pain at all.
Are you shooting for milestones? Are there three or four milestones you have in mind? And is there any one you want to knock down here pretty soon?
I'll be able to start throwing around week 12 from surgery. So that'll be around the middle of February. So I'm looking forward to that. That's kind of when the next phase of the rehab is going to start.
We're back on the Bengals Beat podcast. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside some of the best over on Cincinnati.com, Tyler Dragon and Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty good. How are y'all doing today?
Lindsay, I appreciate the compliment. Thank you. I'm doing good. Thanks, Tyler.
You know what? You know what else is doing good? Bengals fans and Joe Burrow. We've heard a lot from the quarterback over the last week. We talked about it already. He was on the national radio show over on Colin Cowherd last night on the Fox broadcast, a little mega cast. He was talking about his rehab, how things are going. And we got to talk to him today for the first time since his injury. And I don't know about you guys, but nothing really has changed with Joe Burrow and his confidence. Hearing him talk about his rehab process, obviously phase two is coming up in February, the running, the throwing. But I think fans should feel pretty optimistic with Burrow right now.
Yeah, you know, I was even optimistic with his words and his confidence. He seemed self-assured that he'll be ready by week one. He was cautiously optimistic that he'll be ready for the season opener. And, you know, that is music to all Bengals fans' ears, because when he first suffered the injury, you know, everybody kind of was thinking at some point during the regular season he would be able to return. But right now, doctors and, trainers are thinking that he is on pace to return week one. The preseason, he already ruled out if there is a preseason, but, you know, he's targeting the season opener, whenever that will be. And that will be a major plus for the entire organization as a whole, because without Joe Burrow in the lineup, we saw how, you know, the offense was running at the end of last season. You know, Brandon Allen, he performed, you know, admirably, and so did Ryan Finley in that Monday night win. But this offense will go as far as Joe Burrow takes it. And, you know, the sky is the limit, as Tyler Boyd likes to say, when Joe Burrow is at quarterback QB1. So if he's able to be back in the lineup in week one, that is a major boon for the Cincinnati Bengals.
So we're on about, what is it now, 11 months of hearing from Joe Burrow. And it seems like every time we've heard from him, he makes major news. from kind of the first introduction to the Bengals at the NFL Combine last year to draft night and his reaction on being the number one overall pick to when we heard from him during the preseason discussing his mistakes, his anticipation for the week one game, the adjustments he made during the season, on and on and on. Of all the times we heard from Joe Burrow, I think that, you know, this was the least shocking in terms of what he had to say. He had already announced that week one's the expectation and the goal for him. Other than that, it was just Joe being Joe in a very much confident, comfortable, even casual way. And it was a Joe Burrow that seemed and felt like a lot, felt a lot like the Bengals were so excited about drafting back in March.
You know, it was crazy on Saturday, just that slow news drop in the middle of the wild card game. The Cincinnati Bengals make one of their assistant changes, offensive line coach, a lot of people familiar with, Frank Pollock. We did hear from him this week. He's coming back. And I think there's a lot of optimism there because you look at what Frank Pollock was able to do with Joe Mixon back in 2018. And honestly, we've talked about Jim Turner. Everybody was ready for that to be over when you look at what has happened with the offensive line. And look, they're missing some pieces still. There's some work to be done, and you know, free agency is on its way, and the draft to be determined on what they do, what additions they bring in. But bringing Pollock back, what does that mean for this team?
Well, he did talk about, you know, being having a zone blocking scheme, implementing that to the offense. He's also going to be the run game coordinator in addition to the offensive line coach. And in that 2018 season, Joe Mixon rushed for career high. The Bengals offensive line, that was I want to say they were a great offensive line in 2018, but they were better than, you know, they were last season. So, you know, he is an upgrade from Jim Turner. I'll just flat out go ahead and say it. But, you know, I do think that, you know, the Bengals offensive line as a whole, regardless of who the coach is, they have to work on obviously staying healthy and building that continuity. It was a revolving door in that offensive line across the entire offensive line last season. So they need to get healthy. You got some injuries up front with, you know, Jonah Williams and Trey Hopkins. But, you know, once this offensive line returns to health, maybe add some people in the draft or in free agency, primarily maybe at guard and at tackle if you want to, you know, replace Bobby Hart. But the biggest thing, regardless of the coaches, is getting those snaps together, building continuity, and hopefully staying out of the operating table and staying out, you know, of the recovery room, because that, it, you know, really hindered the offensive line last season, is they were not able to be healthy. But Frank Pollock, he's, you know, a reputable coach. He, you know, at the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, he was the Cowboys had a very stout O-line when he was there in Cincinnati in that 2018 season. Bengals offensive line, that was probably one of their best years in the last few years when he was, in charge of that unit. So him coming back, I think that is a plus for the Cincinnati Bengals. And Zach Taylor, that's a good hire for his staff.
So I know usually we discuss the stories we have coming at the end of this podcast, but I guess I'll highlight a story that I'll be working on the rest of this week. Pollock's going to completely, radically change the Bengals running game, and I don't think there's a way to understate that. Let me kind of sum it up this way. So the wide zone scheme is something that Tyler was discussing. It's something that Alex Gibbs and Bill Callahan developed in the late 80s and early 90s that turned teams like the Denver Broncos and Terrell Davis and Arian Foster and the Houston Texans and then Ezekiel Elliott / Darren McFadden and the Dallas Cowboys into one of the best rushing schemes in the NFL. pretty much every team that led the NFL in rushing ran a wide zone scheme. This season, 8 of the top 10 rushing offenses ran wide zone concepts for at least 20% of their plays, which was in the upper echelon, compared to inside zones or draws or pitches or carries, stuff like that. Even the Jets, who Pollock was with last year, ran the 7th most wide zones in the NFL. And the Jets averaged more than 100 rushing yards per game, significantly more than the Bengals did. The last thing I'll say is some of the best rushing offenses in the NFL, teams like Tennessee, the 49ers, the Cleveland Browns, we'll get to them in 20 seconds, ran wide zone schemes. Guess who designed the Browns' new run scheme this year? Bill Callahan. Guess who designed what the 49ers and the Packers did? Kyle Shanahan and Matt LaFleur, who come from this coaching tree. It's a coaching tree that has been proven to be successful. Apparently, Pollock's as good of a teacher as it gets. And here's the last thing I'll say. According to a source, Mike Brown, quote, loved Frank Pollock when he was in Cincinnati. The biggest reason was because that was the only year in the last 15 years the Bengals have had a top 10 rush offense in terms of efficiency. So bringing him, so one last thing, in 2018, the Bengals offensive line was a rookie center, an undrafted free agent right guard. The left side of the offensive line was about to head to free agency, and the right tackle was Bobby Hart, who had just been waived. Frank Pollock had the success he did with arguably not the strongest group of pieces around him. So he's bringing that proven track record across the league, across the sport, and even in Cincinnati back to the Bengals.
I think you can go back to the 2018 season when he was here, what he was able to do with the offense, and obviously Joe Mixon on the ground. A lot of people look at it like, of course, Pollock's going to be the top of the list when you look at offensive line candidates, and they did bring him back, and they look at that and say, why did you let him go in the first place? What do you say to people like that? And did the Bengals mess this up 2 years ago that he should have just still been on the staff, even with a new head coach?
So when there's a coaching change at the top, head coaches generally bring their guys in unless it's, you know, a no-brainer. For instance, Darren Simmons was a no-brainer to bring back. He's regarded as one of the best special teams coaches in the NFL. Jim Turner is one of Zach Taylor's guys. Obviously it didn't work out. So, you know, Zach Taylor decided to go in a different direction, but I wouldn't say that he or the team messed up by, you know, not retaining, Frank Pollock. It's just, that's kind of what happens when there's a new head coach. They like to bring in guys that they have, you know, a familiarity with. And, you know, that's what Zach Taylor did. Jim Turner was his guy, but credit to Zach Taylor for, you know, assessing the situation, realizing that the offensive line is one of the weak spots on the team, if not the weakest spots in the team, and recognizing that there needs to be changes on that unit. And unfortunately for Jim Turner, the changes started with him, and I don't think they're done addressing the O-line this offseason.
So probably the most fascinating relationship to me on the 2020 Bengals was the relationship between Zach Taylor and Jim Turner. In 2011, they both were at Texas A&M. Taylor had just been promoted from grad assistant to tight ends coach, and Turner was the offensive line coach. Taylor had never played tight end. He'd never coached tight ends. And from all the people I've talked to who were around then, Jim Turner played a really huge influential part in helping Zach Taylor better understand that area of the game from a coaching perspective. Follow through, I think 6 years later, they're together again at Cincinnati for a brief time at the University of Cincinnati. Finally, of course, they connected as well throughout their career and other stops in Miami in particular. So just what happens, like Taylor said, when you bring in a staff, you bring in your guys. And clearly Turner wasn't the right fit for the Bengals. But if you want to go back and play the 2020 hindsight game, you know, at least Zach Taylor making that move showed you that the Bengals were trusting him to make the coaching moves. For example, you know, no one in the front office was going to go out and get Jim Turner. That's just not the decision they were willing to make. That was a Zach Taylor move. And that's what you want from the head coach you have running your program. You want them to have that type of power and say. And but now 2 years later, you have an even better offensive line coach. And Taylor was adamant too in saying that those will be his calls. So, you know, you turn over your franchise to a head coach like the Bengals have with Zach Taylor, at least they're getting what at least they're getting that, which is what they're looking for. So now you got a better offensive line coach, but you still have Taylor making calls.
And you're making a lot of players happy. I mean, I remember Joe Mixon being so upset when they let Trent Pollock go. And then when they brought him back, you had Joe Burrow telling us today that he called him just hollering away, so excited that Frank Pollock was coming back. So internally, a lot of the players who have been under Frank Pollock are really excited. But you guys, I don't even like to talk about this, even though we are in the off season and we're going to have all the draft boards out, the mock drafts, going to talk to plenty of people. We'll have all those interviews over on Cincinnati.com about 3 months away from the NFL draft. You watch the national championship, you see playmakers out there, you look at this offensive line, you want to draft at number five. Who are you going to get? Are you going to add to protection when it comes to Joe Burrow? Are you going to do that in free agency? All of those questions are unknown right now. You're the Cincinnati Bengals. They don't have a GM technically. Some would say it's Duke Tobin, but they really don't. What are you doing? You're at five. You're in a really great position because if you can draft an offensive lineman, that is a top five talent, you get him if he's there. You get these wide receiver playmakers. Who's going to help Joe Burrow become even better in 2021?
Well, I do have to say, Lizzie, I think you do like talking about this because I see your
tweets.
You're adding fuel to the fire in your tweets.
I like to do that.
So to answer your question, I think obviously if Penei Sewell, the tackle out of Oregon, is sitting there at five, you don't hesitate and you draft him. But I can see the New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins or even the Atlanta Falcons taking him. He's the clear-cut best tackle in the draft. So if he's still available at five, turn in your card immediately. Don't think twice. but if he's not, you know, I can see the Bengals going after Joe Burrow's former teammate in Ja'Marr Chase or the Heisman Trophy winner, Alabama Devontae Smith. He looked exceptional. last night, I was hearing some people comparing him to Jerry Rice. I wouldn't go that far, but anytime you can be compared to the GOAT and Jerry Rice, that's a tremendous compliment. And also, don't sleep on Florida tight end Kyle Pitts. He's another player that, you know, he is the consensus best tight end in the draft, and there's not a close second. The Bengals tight end production was down last year, was among the worst in the league. So I can see the Bengals, you know, considering Kyle Pitts. I definitely believe that they'll bring him in for an interview. Ja'Marr Chase out of LSU, Devontae Smith, a sleeper pick, Kyle Pitts. But number one in the Bengals draft board is Penei Sewell out of Oregon. But unfortunately at five, I don't know if he'll be there. He could. But if I had to bet on it, I do not think he will be available when the Bengals pick at number five.
A lot of people have a lot of different ideas or strategies. We saw Joe Mixon yesterday. I loved it. He said, go out and sign a tackle and then add this kid, Devontae Smith or Ja'Marr Chase, and let's go into the season. That's where I am at as well in terms of what I would do with the Bengals. And here's why. You cannot, no matter what you do, be in a position to where you have to take a tackle at five. If that happens, that's the scenario where you come out probably in the weakest position heading into the offseason. Because if you don't take a tackle, or if you don't take a tackle in free agency, you pretty much have to either take a tackle at five who is in that lower tier or retain Bobby Hart. As we've mentioned, when you're approving the offensive line, if they do that without adding any strength at tackle, how much better of an offensive line will it be in reality? So you do have to, I think, and I've I've also put out the numbers here for a story I'll be working on in a bit. But, you know, the majority of really good offensive tackles in this league make between $8 and $12 million. That's doable, and it's not going to break the bank at all for the Cincinnati Bengals. Jonah Williams, on the other hand, is making $4.4 million. He's on his rookie scale contract. So it's not like by moving him to offensive guard that you're gonna be limiting his value at all. So here's what happened. You sign an offensive tackle in free agency. If Sewell's on the board at five, you take him and move Jonah Williams into guard. Jonah Williams, I wrote a story earlier this year about how Jonah is particularly suited to play all five spots on the line. It's what he's done basically his entire career in high school, and then he switched around at Alabama. And even when the Bengals drafted him, they said he could play some guard. That's a scenario where even if you don't add another receiver, you have maybe one of the better offensive lines in the NFL. Or if Sewell's not there, then you can still have a decent offensive line with two tackles and Williams and I guess Sewell, who they draft, and then add a starting receiver as well. So a lot of different ways it could go, but the two that make the most sense are the ones where you sign an offensive tackle in free agency.
Yeah, and we'll find out about that in the next couple months. And I did have Willie Anderson, should be Hall of Famer on the offensive line, former Bengal, get mad at me because I was talking about skilled position and not the offensive line. If Sewell's there, we can all agree, of course, you're going to take him at number five. If he's not, you got to have a backup plan, and there are plenty of receivers. And even Joe Burrow, when asked about Ja'Marr Chase, looked like he wouldn't mind adding his former teammate into the offense.
What's your backup plan, Lindsay?
My backup plan? I'm so conflicted. I honestly am. I really am. I mean, obviously you go offensive line, but if Sewell's not there, you don't reach. Plenty of people from Pro Football Focus that I've talked to week after week and just this past week are telling me, I mean, these guys are watching every play, every snap, and they're saying you don't reach unless you're trading down maybe another offensive lineman, but you have skilled positions there. The thing about Joe Burrow, you guys, he can make any receiver, tight end, a fullback look good. So I don't think it's a problem with his playmakers out there, even though they're going to lose AJ Green. And sometimes I forget that John Ross was even on the roster. But I think those are obviously nice options to have at number five if you aren't going offensive line. And there's only one on your board right there. Other than that, you go to second round, third round. And obviously, it will be telling what the Cincinnati Bengals do in free agency. If they are signing guards, and that's the thing. I know a lot of people want to add another guard, and they have to. And I like Charlie's plan of moving Jonah Williams to guard at the moment. This team in the past, they haven't spent money at the guard position. I've said it before on this podcast. I've said it before on social media. They showed you what they thought of it when they let Kevin Zeitler go, and they're still trying to find Kevin Zeitler's replacement. I think, like, they have the money. If they are able to spend at the guard position, that'll be more telling to what their draft board's going to look like on day two, not day one for me personally.
I'll tell you right now, there's absolutely no way Jonah Williams is playing guard next year.
We're just playing scenarios right now.
In all seriousness, Tyler, like, so one, when the Bengals drafted him, they said he could have a future guard in this team. And two, that's the scenario where, so what you're saying is if Jonah Williams isn't playing guard, if the Bengals sign a tackle in free agency, like most people say is a good idea, you're saying then you don't take Penei Sewell and you draft basically for need and not take an offensive tackle instead and not take the best player available. That's you're leaving yourself up to that risk if you don't sign a tackle in free agency.
Well, the Bengals, they're not – I don't think – now, again, I'm not going off sources right here, but the Bengals, they don't believe that – tackle is a very, very huge need. They think Bobby Hart played pretty good last year. Jonah Williams last year was pretty much his rookie year. He was injured his entire first season, so this was his first year. And for, you know, pretty much a rookie left tackle, he performed pretty good. So it's the guard position where the Bengals had some struggles with. You know, Michael Jordan struggled at the guard spot. And when Xavier Suofilo got hurt, you know, they continued to struggle. That's why they added Quinn Spain. So if the Bengals are going into, and this, now I can go in the sources realm, but I'm not. If the Bengals are going to go into this offseason and they are going to, first of all, look at the guard position first and foremost. That they believe is their biggest weakness. Now, if they're unable to get a guard, then of course they're going to look in that area in the draft. But also, they have in mind that tackle is a pretty good draft class for tackle. You have the kid out of Alabama who's going to be a first-round tackle. I'm drawing a blank on his name, but there's a tackle out of University of Texas who's pretty good. They're not Penei Sewell, but they are pretty good. Now, if Penei Sewell is available at 5, you go ahead and get him. And then you probably move on from – I can see the Bengals moving on from Bobby Hart. Now, they didn't tell me this, but I can see that happening, or see if you can get, you know, some trade value for him, maybe a late round pick.
So then Tyler, just in that scenario, you're leaving yourself with two options. One is drafting an offensive tackle who's in the probably 12 to 25 range on most boards at 5, or two, going into next season with Jonah Williams and Bobby Hart as your tackles.
Who's your guard?
And they're fine with that. They are fine. They don't think Bobby Hart was terrible. And if you look at the data, he wasn't. And they don't think Jonah Williams was terrible. If you look at most of the times that Joe Burrow was pressured and when he was sacked, it was up the middle. It was guard play. And quite frankly, it was on the center too. Trey Hopkins. Now, Trey Hopkins did okay, but it was on the center too. Now, of course, Jonah Williams and Bobby Hart, they're the scapegoats because they're going up against premier pass rushers all the time. But if you look when Myles Garrett went up against the Bengals and was wreaking havoc, where was he lining up and sacking Joe Burrow? He was lining up inside. There's a reason for that. He was lining up in between the tackles, over the guards. Almost every time. And that's where he got most of his pressure. Joe Burrow's season-ending injury, where did that happen? Up the middle. Guard. So if you look, most of Joe Burrow, the times that he got pressured, it was up the middle between the tackles. It wasn't the tackles all the time, but yes, when Joe Burrow gets sacked by edge rusher that's going up against Bobby Hart or Jonah Williams, a lot of people are going to look at that as, oh, it's Bobby Hart's fault, or, oh, it's Jonah Williams' fault. Because that's easy for the human eye to see. But Joe Burrow got pressured most of the time up the middle.
But here's my question. Will this team spend money on a guard position? And you can look at the draft all you want. Day 2, day 3, what are they going to do in the later rounds after the first round? Because I don't think they're going to take a guard in the first with number 5 pick, and they shouldn't. And they need to fix their guard play. They haven't paid a guard in the past. And yes, they've added guards. You can look at Xavier, 1-year deals, 2-year deals, minor contracts, nothing that's really major or breaking the bank. This team has the money to spend. Are they going to fix in free agency their poorest position?
That's the thing. The Bengals spent $27 million on offensive linemen last year total, which was in the bottom 8 in the NFL. And consistently, that's kind of been the tier they've been at as well. And the whole conversation we had during the season was, it's time to invest in the offensive line. Where I'm coming from is, you have to invest in the most important positions in the offensive line. Because even though I think you make a good point there, the guards were more responsible for some of the sacks and the tackles. Why not just have great tackles? You know what I mean? That just does so much more for an offensive line, I think, for a similar price. It's really interesting too. And then now I'll turn it back over to Tyler. But you have three offensive tackles making between $18 and $23 million a year. After that, it's basically everyone between 12 and 15. And there are actually more guards making between, or pretty much in that range, than there are tackles, despite tackle being a more important position on the offensive line. And I know I didn't play offensive line, but preparing for conversations like these, I spoke with a lot of offensive line experts during the year, and the consensus is in it. And the last thing I'll say is this, just during this podcast, I went back up and I read Zach Taylor's transcript from when they drafted Jonah Williams, quote, "Certainly he can play guard. He has great flexibility here. Jonah's been switching positions his entire career. He would be an elite $4.4 million guard. And that only happens if you add Penei Sewell anyway. So it's not even something you're counting on, one. And two, if Penei Sewell's gone, you still have a very good tackle that you just paid in free agency, and you keep Jonah where he is at left. Happy draft season. This is what it's all about.
Well, I knew we had plenty to talk about with this. You guys, there's 3 months to go. And look, I still feel like, I know we've talked about it before, and they spent a lot of money last year, and just kind of looking at the cap situation. Internally, if they decide to go early with Jesse Bates and extend him, Carl Lawson, all of that fun stuff with their own guys that they got to spend money on. But I think this team, and the biggest question mark is, obviously, we talked about investing in the offensive line. They've got to be willing to open the checkbook when it comes to the guard. And that's just something that they haven't valued in the past or wanted to pay in the past. And I think that would be a game changer. And look, they got a lot of holes. I'm not just saying the offensive line is all they need fixed. But when it comes to protecting Joe Burrow, and if you want to get other picks later in the draft, obviously skill positions, you flip to the defensive side, plenty of positions to fix.
I won't even say almost. The defensive line was probably just as bad, if not worse,
for sure,
than the offensive line. The Bengals had the fewest sacks in the league last year, and Carl Lawson's a free agent, and that was their most consistent pass rusher. So there are not a lot of premier pass rushers in the draft class this year. So the Bengals will probably need to, look at edge rushers in free agency and most likely re-sign Carl Lawson. I think that's where a lot of their money is going to go to. I've said before that they're going to try to retain their top talent. Jesse Bates is a free agent after next season. Re-sign him. Carl Lawson, re-sign him. Possibly taking a look at, William Jackson III. Kevin Huber's a free agent. So you have a lot of free agents. Brandon Wilson, one of the best returners in the league, is a free agent. So you have a lot of free agents that, the Bengals are going to look at and try to retain. And that is priority. That's at the top of their priority list. I can definitely say that. And that's probably over signing a guard or a tackle in free agency right now, is trying to retain top talent. And, primarily Jesse Bates, who's a free agent after the 2021 season, and Carl Lawson, who is a free agent this offseason as well.
Oh my goodness, you guys. There's going to be months and months and months and podcasts and videos and breakdowns and mock drafts. Plenty on Cincinnati.com over the next couple months with the Cincinnati Bengals at number 5. And I still feel like it's going to be an active free agency. A lot of internal guys, as Tyler just mentioned, to be determined on who they extend, but we'll have all the fun stuff coming soon. Now we're going to get to postseason. If you watched this past weekend, I'll just say right now, the AFC is so loaded compared to the NFC. You look at the AFC North alone, all three teams, but the Cincinnati Bengals went to the postseason. I think when you look at Pittsburgh, and obviously Cleveland, credit to them, what they were able to do without their head coach. Pittsburgh's getting old. They got a quarterback problem. They got some decisions to make when it comes to some of their star players, and they don't got a lot of money to spend. You look at the Ravens, you look at the Browns, and I think those are the two teams that are in the Cincinnati Bengals window right now. And when you talk about rookie contract deals, quarterback play at a really young age, and Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson, not even comparing all of them. But the Cincinnati Bengals, they got some competition in the AFC North. What did this past weekend really tell you about this division?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, Lindsay. I said last week that the Bengals have to play catch up. All three AFC North teams won at least 11 games this season, and the Bengals have won 6 games in the last 2 years. I will say this, though, and you just mentioned it, the Steelers' window is closing. they have, I believe, 19 players entering free agency this offseason, and 10 of those are starters. And not to mention, they have a quarterback problem. Ben Roethlisberger is entering the last year of his deal, and he's owed over $40 million. Well, no, he has a $41 million cap hit next year. So the Steelers, you know, they don't have a lot of cap flexibility. The salary cap is going to shrink a little bit because of the coronavirus pandemic, the ramifications from it. So the Steelers window is shrinking rapidly, if it's not already, you know, closed now. Now, the Browns and the Ravens, their windows are, you know, opening, and they're still opening. I said at the beginning of the season, I'll say now, I think the Baltimore Ravens are the best team in the division. And the Browns, they're right there too. I think Kevin Stefanski has done a tremendous job of coaching that team. And even with him in his basement watching the game last weekend, the Browns were still able to, you know, pull that off, you know, down several players because of COVID-19 protocols. The Browns window is wide open. You know, they got those two running backs, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and they're without arguably their most explosive offensive player in Odell Beckham Jr. The defense, you know, plays pretty well, especially with Myles Garrett. So, yeah, the Bengals, they got to play catch-up. And those two teams aren't going anywhere, because you can argue that, you know, the Bengals are a young, up-and-coming team. But the Browns and the Ravens, they're young too, and they're better than the Bengals at this point. So you got to play catch-up. The Bengals, they do have – good foundation pieces to build around, and that's why the franchise is optimistic and fans should be too, with Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins on the defensive side. You can get DJ Reader healthy, get Trey Waynes healthy, re-sign Jesse Bates to a long-term extension, re-sign Carl Lawson, Von Bell. You got some foundation pieces that the Bengals can build around, and they can hopefully, for the Bengals' sake, compete with, you know, the Baltimore Ravens and the Cleveland Browns, because those two teams aren't going anywhere.
Yeah, it's funny. Obviously, the takeaway from the weekend is what's going on in Pittsburgh, how far away almost they seem from contention now to where they were about 2 months ago. It was a reminder, I think, of how quickly teams can age out. What it kind of reminded me of was how some of the Bengals players looked over the last 5 years, specifically some of those core pieces from the Bengals playoff runs, watching guys like Adam Jones and then Vontaze Burfict and then Andy Dalton to an extent, and A.J. Green and Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, kind of watching them not be elite anymore. Because obviously, again, those are some of the best players the Bengals have had this decade that I mentioned, but they didn't close their career with the Bengals as strongly as they started it. So that's a reminder that when your players are young and good, you have to capitalize on it. Because pretty soon for the Bengals, these guys are going to start to be 29, 30, 31, which is old for a football player. The Bengals' window to compete with Joe Burrow isn't as big as you think it is, even if Burrow has a 20-year career, because, you know, he might be a part of three or four different windows, because a lot of the rotating pieces, you know, who knows how, you know, I don't expect Joe Mixon to play football for 17 more years. I don't expect Tyler Boyd to play football for 17 more years, and on and on and on. It really cycles through. And while the quarterback is the constant, you have to take advantage of the fact when you have really good young pieces, like Boyd, Higgins, Mixon, Bates, Hubbard, Lawson, if they resign him, Jackson, if they resign him, they have some guys. So watching the Steelers reminded me there's even more pressure going on these next 2-3 seasons.
So Charlie, are you saying Lindsay and I will be too old for football players? We'll be old. Are we too old?
My favorite, my favorite full circle moment of the season, quick tangent here. We did a podcast in July. We're talking about like how Geno Atkins is going to do. And I pulled up all the stats about how all the defensive tackles over the last 10 years, 32 years or older did. There were only like five of them. And then one of them, Marcus Hunt, comes back to the Bengals in November. And I got to ask him, what's it like being a 33-year-old offensive or defensive tackle? Because he's one of a select few at that position and at most positions, to be honest. I didn't forget how old you guys are specifically, but it seems like 31, 33, 34 is the age where NFL players at not quarterback positions start to phase out.
Lindsay, you'll be old for a football player.
Oh, you need to this whole conversation. I don't even want to think about it.
I honestly don't know how old both of you are. I really do mean that. So I'm not trying to be mean.
No. It's really crazy when players that you grew up as a kid watching start to become like in the Hall of Fame conversation. And you're like, no way. No, that guy, I remember watching it when I was a kid. So I think that's the point I'm getting to. Definitely starting to.
What about the players you grew up watching like in college and they're now in the Hall of Fame? Like I grew up watching Allen Iverson, you know, play at Georgetown. Allen Iverson is now in the Hall of Fame.
That's insane. That's totally insane. I don't want to think about this anymore. It's really sad. On Cincinnati.com, Charlie mentioned it. He's going to have a great piece up there about the Bengals' semi-new offensive line coach, Frank Pollock. And Tyler, it's that time, your favorite time. Go ahead with your questions of the week.
Okay, questions of the week. I got two of them this week. So Joe Burrow talked today. You can see the entire interview on Cincinnati.com, but he talked about how miserable the first couple weeks were for him after his surgery. So this question is inspired from that. What's the toughest injury that you had to overcome?
Oh, I have one. And I've never, knock on wood, broken a bone, sprained anything. And I've played plenty of sports from T-ball to high school basketball and volleyball. I was in a basketball game my freshman year and I was getting a varsity start and I took an elbow to the face. And all of a sudden, this is kind of graphic. There was blood everywhere, all over my mouth and everything. My tooth sliced my lip open. And that was pretty graphic. And it's not even that bad to overcome, but it just sucked. I'll just say that. That was pretty gross.
So my two high school sports were basketball and tennis. And during basketball season, someone landed on top of me and really messed up my back badly. I played through it the rest of the year. And then I tried to play a tennis season through it, which was a worse idea. Because, you know, that sport's a lot of sudden movements, a lot of twisting your back. And apparently my back was like, my spine was like 4 inches off. It kind of came to a head one day where I literally locked up on the court. I had to quit the match because I couldn't move. And then I lied down for about 3 days straight because I couldn't move my back. I was out for the season, but it was just my freshman year. Now I turned five.
Wow. Okay. Well, going into my senior year in college, I tore my ACL. And it was probably the most devastating injury I had because I had these big aspirations for my senior year track season. And I was able to come back, but I ended up having, you know, to wear a knee brace my entire senior year track season. And I was just never the same. So it was tough for me. And then I had an old man injury. When I worked at NFL Network, we played flag football. And we had a flag football league in Los Angeles, and we were pretty good. Mind you, I played on my boss's team. Like, he recruited me to play in this team. And so we were playing one day. It was the first game of the playoffs, and I was going out for a pass. Mind you, I was in the end zone. I kid you not. And I ran an out route, and the quarterback threw to me, and I was about to go up for the catch. And all of a sudden, I felt like somebody kicked me from behind, and I literally flipped over on the ground. The ball sailed over my head, and like, I'm yelling at the ref, pass interference, like, he kicked me, he tripped me. And I was so like furious, and the ref was like, I didn't see it. And I looked up at the guy who was guarding me, and like, he had like a, you know, look on his face. And then so I try to get up and like I can't feel my foot. I'm like, yo, what is wrong? And so I'm like limping to the sideline, take my shoe off, and I'm trying to feel my foot. I cannot put any weight in my foot or my toes. And then like some people come over and like, Tyler, I think you could have, you know, tore your Achilles. I'm like, oh my goodness. So I end up going to the hospital that night, and sure enough, my Achilles is torn.
Ouch.
Oh, so my left leg, just only my left leg, I've torn my ACL and my Achilles.
That sounds miserable. And the Achilles.
So I probably had two of the worst injuries in sports on one leg.
And so much has changed with the ACL surgery. I mean, you can even see NFL athletes now, Deshaun Watson and obviously Joe Burrow. Hopefully the rehab goes well with him in his second phase. But the Achilles, man, that one's tough. That's a tough timeline.
Yeah. So now this is more of a more fun question, more of an uplifting question, because I don't like talking about injuries too much. Divisional round playoffs are this weekend. Of course, I have to ask these questions. I got the playoff picks for you two. So we'll start off with the Saturday games. We'll go one by one. First off, the Los Angeles Rams versus the Green Bay Packers. Who do y'all got?
I got Packers. I like Aaron Rodgers in the playoffs, the way he's playing this season, an MVP player. Los Angeles, they looked okay this past week on the road, if you call it, against the Seattle Seahawks. But I just like the way the Packers are playing. I think they have the best bet at playing in the NFC Championship game or Super Bowl on the NFC side. So, yeah, I'll go Green Bay.
We're going to learn two things this weekend. We're going to learn that Russell Wilson is not as good of a quarterback as Aaron Rodgers even right now. And we're going to learn that Devonta Adams is better than any wide receiver that the Seattle Seahawks have. I love the Seahawks. I think they were my preseason NFC Championship pick. Definitely picked them to win last week. But I just don't see the same even potential for fault in the Green Bay Packers offense. So I guess for a score, I'll go like Packers 30-17.
Okay. We're unanimous there. I have the Green Bay Packers too. California guys don't perform well in cold weather. Trust me, I know from experience. They have to travel to Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers could be the MVP of the league this year. He's playing at, you know, an elite level. As always, the defense is playing pretty well, so I have the Green Bay Packers moving on. The night game on Saturday is a team we know well. We talked about them earlier in this podcast, the Baltimore Ravens versus Lindsey Patterson's Buffalo Bills. Who do you two have?
I think this is going to be a great game. Normally, games don't live up to the hype the way this one probably won't. I like the way the Baltimore Ravens are playing. I still feel like they are playing over the last few weeks, ever since Lamar Jackson did come back from the COVID list, like the best team in the AFC North, and you could say even the AFC. I like Josh Allen. We talk about the MVP. He's not going to be an MVP. Buffalo looked okay against the Colts. They almost lost it, which would have been terrible for Bills Mafia. They got over the playoff hump, both teams, when you look at Lamar Jackson and the postseason record. I'm going to go Baltimore Ravens.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. I like the way they're playing right now. I don't know what it is.
So this will sound like a lame comparison, but especially because Baltimore has nowhere near the receivers that the Alabama has. But I feel like just Baltimore is going to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage and dominate the run game like they have all season. They've proven that the opponent really doesn't matter as much. I think they'll be just fine.
All right. We're got the same picks again. I have the Baltimore Ravens going on the road and beating the Buffalo Bills. I think their rushing attack is going to be too much for the Bills. And I do believe that they'll be able to contain Josh Allen and that Bills offense. So Sunday games, the first game on the docket is the Cleveland Browns versus the defending Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. I have a feeling this one's going to be unanimous as well.
Yeah, Kansas City. I know they haven't played in a little while, and you could even go back to the last game regular season, leaving the starters out. Some may say it's a questionable move. You never know what's going to happen. As long as everyone stays okay and they have negative COVID tests all this week, I like Patrick Mahomes. I don't think both teams have that great of a defense, so it might be a little bit of a shootout. But Pat Mahomes, Travis Kelce, I love the duo, Tyreek Hill. It's just going to be fun to watch. I'm so glad that they're back this weekend, because I think that's one thing that we missed this past weekend and wildcard weekend, the play of Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes in the postseason. So, yeah, I'm going Kansas City by 2 scores, actually.
I just hope that when Kansas City wins this game by 14 or 17, that it doesn't take away from what the Browns did last week. Because, I mean, it's still special, putting up a 28-point lead in the first quarter against their biggest rival, the Steelers, winning their first playoff game in forever. That's a special moment in Cleveland, and I hope they're still able to hold on to that when they lose by more than 2 scores.
Yeah, I have the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl, so obviously I have them beating the Browns. I think that they are the clear-cut best team in the NFL. Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL, and, you know, their offense is a force to be reckoned with. Like Lindsay said, their defense can give up some points, but overall, I think top to bottom that they are the best team in the league, and I think they're going to repeat as Super Bowl champions. The Sunday night game, this could be the one that we might differ a little bit. Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the New Orleans Saints in New Orleans. Who do y'all got?
I'm going to go Bucs in this one, only because, and look, the Saints, you could say, have talent on offense. I'm kind of asleep when I watch the New Orleans Saints. Even this past week, I'm just not feeling them. They're good. I picked them to be in the Super Bowl this year, but I just don't buy them right now. And I kind of like the way Tampa's playing. Tom Brady is still impressing me what he's able to do at his age. They have AB out there. I like their defense. So, yeah, I'm going Tampa in this one.
Yeah, I agree with you, Lindsay. I think that in this case in particular, the momentum that Tampa has coming into this game versus an older, more experienced New Orleans team coming off a little bit of a layoff, I think that makes a difference in Tampa Bay's favor. We haven't seen warm weather Tom Brady in the playoffs in a while. And I just think that's a great team all around, top to bottom roster construction-wise. Leonard Fournette ran the ball great last week, and I think that there's the opportunity for him to do the same as well. Tampa's able to play with the lead.
Well, somebody's going to have some bragging rights in this game because I have the New Orleans Saints. I think that, you know, Drew Brees and that offense, sometimes they leave a lot to be desired, but when they are clicking in all cylinders, they're one of the best offenses in the league. Alvin Kamara, one of the best running backs. You know, Mike Thomas, you know, obviously one of the best receivers. That defense, you know, if they get that pass rush going, I think that they'll be able, you know, to neutralize Tom Brady in that offense. So I have the New Orleans Saints winning. So I'm sure if Tampa Bay ends up winning, I'll get a text from you too. But best believe if the Saints win, you guys will get a text from me.
You didn't get a text from me after the Browns won. I think I was the only one that picked them last week.
He did pick them, and Charlie didn't even say anything. He had so many bragging rights to be like, yeah, guys, I was right
about it. Charlie, you could have texted us. I would have said you were right.
Next time. When there's money on the line.
I'm totally game for that. Plenty of football coming this weekend. I'm pumped about it. Divisional round before we get to championship weekend. Plenty on Cincinnati.com, you guys. What else is coming this week?
Well, I am covering the AFC North teams in the playoffs. I do What We Learned, so you can follow along, and I'll have a What We Learned in the Cleveland Browns and Kansas City Chiefs game, and also on Saturday I'll have a What We Learned on the Ravens and Bills contest. And also, if you want all the latest on Joe Burrow and his press conference today, I have a piece on him as well. And then Frank Pollock and the run game, I have a story on him too. So follow along cincinnati.com. And I know, Charlie, you have a piece on Frank Pollock coming up as too, right?
Correct. I spoke with kind of Frank Pollock's right-hand man with the Bengals coaching staff in 2018, the guy who worked alongside Pollock redesigning the Bengals run scheme. He's not with the Bengals anymore. He's a high school coach now, but he has unique insight into what Frank Pollock likes to call and how he built himself into that type of coach. And scheme-wise, what the Bengals are going to look like. Maybe a lot more fullbacks, so get excited.
Uh-oh.
Well, Sam Hubbard fullback action. That's what we're going to see from 2018 all the way in 2021. Make sure you check it out. Good stuff, as always, cincinnati.com. There's no off-season for the Cincinnati Bengals. We'll have you covered over on Instagram. You can follow along E&Q Sports, Instagram, E&Q Bengals. Thank you for listening to the Bengals Beat Podcast.